views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio, your guide to practical mindfulness and meditation. Join hosts Tim Darter and Steve Kramer and discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day. Watch yourself connecting in a whole new way and find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now here's your hosts, Tim Darter and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. It's so lovely to be with you today, and it's very lovely to be with Carol Berry. Tim is not with us today. He's taking a day off, and I am joined in the studio, in the humble Spirit Fire studio, with a very special guest, Carol Berry. She's sitting right across from me, and today we're going to be talking about Vincent van Gogh. Van Gogh is somebody that both Carol and I are very passionate about, and I have a feeling she's going to pronounce his name by the very, the actual way it should be pronounced in his own language. So get ready for that. And today we're going to be talking about Ground of Being. So before I introduce Carol, I'll talk a bit about that. So as you know, here on Spirit Fire Radio, we bring a guest on who has something to say within their own life about a particular step of Spirit Fire's own meditation practice, which is called the Practice of Living Awareness. And it's a 14-step program, and we are toward the end of this round, which is so exciting. We are on the step called the Ground of Being. And this step is all about embodiment. So we've come a long way in our meditation practice thus far. And we've focused for the second half of the practice on vision, on mind. What is the relationship of the mind and our vision to our sense of self? And how does our sense of self facilitate awareness, a greater awareness? I can't think of anybody, any human being who has incarnated on this planet who hasn't just lived and experienced the challenges of what it means to embody a vision. How does one find their vision, their purpose, and be the living expression of that vision? Vincent van Gogh has had an incredible life. And you know, at this point, I'm going to say hi to Carol. Hi, Carol, who's sitting across from me.
Hi, Steve. It's so nice to be here and to talk about Vincent van Gogh is the right name. But actually, Vincent wanted to be called Vincent, simply.
Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that a part of his inner knowing? He somehow knew that in order for us all to come together, that we would all be able to say the word Vincent and be sort of in union behind that name. So what if we just call him Vincent?
Let's do that, because that's the way he signed his paintings, too.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. He detached himself from his family. He became himself. And he also felt that people would relate to him better if he was just Vincent and not attached to a family or someone else. So anyway, that's what he wanted. He actually wrote about that.
It's wonderful. And isn't that the ground? He found his ground. His ground was within the vibration and that name, the expression Vincent. I would say that, if we say the name Vincent globally, isn't it pretty remarkable that so many people would know who we were talking about? There are not many Vincents who have reached that sort of common household sort of name as Vincent van Gogh. So it's kind of lovely in that way. So there's something really interesting that I want to point out as to why I'm so excited to be sitting across from Carol. So Carol and I have something very unique in common. Both of us have found it important and sort of made it our mission to get to know this man, Vincent, in a very particular way. Both Carol and I have been to the very locations that Vincent painted, and we have stood on the ground in Arles, in Auvers, in Paris, all over Europe. We have made a pilgrimage of sorts to trace this man's life through the areas that he painted. We have stepped foot on the very ground that Vincent's being stepped foot on and created the most amazing, marvelous paintings. And interestingly enough, Carol and I did it in the same year.
That's right.
1997.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that correct?
2007.
2007. Oh my gosh, you're so right. I knew it was a seven in there. Somehow time collapses for me in my life. But very interesting. So both of us have stood on the very ground where Vincent has painted.
Right.
Carol, we're here to talk about an amazing book. Carol has written a book called Vincent van Gogh, His Spiritual Vision in Life and Art. It is an amazing book. As I'm sitting here holding it in my hands, it is covered in post-its and markings and is a really wonderful, wonderful book. So first off, congratulations, Carol. This is an incredible book. And I hope all of you listeners who are inspired by this show will take a look. Once again, it's called Vincent van Gogh, His Spiritual Vision in Life and Art. So could you tell us a little bit about your inspiration? I'll tell the listeners that we're going to be reading a number of quotes from this book. And Vincent was an avid writer. He wrote to his brother quite a bit, and we know so much about his very being. By reading these letters, we get a bit of an insight into his soul, his purpose, his vision. Right. And so what was your inspiration for writing this book?
Well, you know, I started really looking into Vincent's life based on a course I took many years ago, which was actually called The Compassion of Vincent van Gogh. And the professor who taught it at Yale Divinity School was a friend of mine. And after his death, I actually received the notes from this class. He had never written a book about it. His name is Henry Nouwen, and he's a prolific writer, but he never wrote about Vincent. And I was then told, once I received the notes, do something with these notes. And at that point, I really started to look more deeply into Vincent's life. I read all the 800 plus letters. And it, as you say, it's been a pilgrimage, not just physically, but it's been a pilgrimage spiritually, because as I began to read more and more and looked at his art and looked at his words and understood where he came from, I realized he was a very compassionate man and a very spiritual man. And eventually I gave some talks, and one of the talks was listened to by the editor of the book that I have just published, and he said, I have a series of books on modern spiritual masters, and I do not have an artist in that series. I have others, philosophers and theologians and spiritual people, writers, authors, the Dalai Lama, for example, Gandhi is one of those spiritual masters, and he said, I really would like Vincent to be a part of this series. And so that's how the book happened. But I had already been, you know, charged to do something. And I do retreats on Vincent's compassion, on his spirituality. And the more I read and the more I look into his work, the more fascinated I am. So I have really been very much involved with Vincent for a long time now.
How wonderful. It actually gave me chills. I get chills quite a bit when I'm talking to guests. To hear you say Vincent van Gogh is a spiritual master, and to hear, to know that an editor resonated with this man and saw him as more than just a painter. You know, I spent many years in New York City, the greater part of my life, and it was a weekly pilgrimage of sorts for me to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. If you live in New York City, you know that you can pay what you want, and I would give them my lovely dollar bill, which added up to way more than one ticket per year, and I would go every week almost. Mm. And I would always find myself in the post-impressionist, and I would find myself in front of the landscape with cypress trees, which is one of my favorite paintings of Vincent's.
Right.
And, you know, that room was always one of the most crowded rooms in the entire Metropolitan Museum of Art. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get to know a bit about people. You get to know a bit about humanity, not only by looking at art, but by looking at people looking at art. Mm-hmm. And Vincent was so well aware of his intentions with his art. You know, he said he just wanted his art to be in people's homes. And you write about that quite a bit. He wanted his art to be seen by the everyday man and woman and human being. He felt that his work would be in sort of – he saw his work within the everyday kitchen, in the everyday sort of living room, where people could appreciate this sort of relationship he had to nature and to other human beings. of which compassion, we'll talk about that. What I find fascinating is this man who, as our listeners may not know, sold one painting in his entire life. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure you know a lot of the details. But for what is the equivalent these days of about $75, he sold a single painting in his life. And he saw his paintings and really felt deep down in his soul that one day, even if it was not during his lifetime here, that his paintings would be seen by many people. They are seen by people all over the world, not only in museums, but in postcards, in right. T-shirts, in mugs. Yeah. We're so familiar.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, yeah?
It's fascinating because one of the things, as you said, Steve, he wanted his art to hang in people's homes, to brighten up the dark corners, he wrote. And he tried to make prints, and that didn't work. But the prints are made today. So the as you say, the calendars, the cards, they're hanging in everybody's home. Everybody can afford to look at one of Vincent's paintings. And I am also fascinated by the fact that he is so much still in the forefront of the art news, of the art world, of people's minds. His work has become so iconic. And what I also liked you saying is that you would go to the post-impressionist room at the Met and find yourself invariably standing in front of the wheat fields, the cypress trees. And, you know, you did what Vincent did when he looked at nature. He would look and stay in front and get into and absorb. And what he then wanted to do with his paintings is to give everybody living wherever they are that same sense of standing in front of the cypresses and the wheat fields. And you have to look long. Vincent said you have to look long and hard at art because the great masters have really taken things from nature. Nature was his inspiration. And what he wanted to do, nature and people, he wanted them to be part of people's life. He wanted it to be an invitation to see deeper into life, into what is precious. And when you really look at the subject of his painting, it's ordinary stuff. It's a wheat field. It's a tree trunk. It's some roots.
But nothing ordinary about it, right?
Nothing.
Poor right. Carol, I'm on the edge of my seat because everything she's saying is inspiring me so much and I just want to go on and on. Everything you're saying is so beautiful and so rich and so true. Because we know when we stand in front of this image of the cypress tree that we are witnessing and experiencing the essence of a cypress tree. Right. And not only its essence, but we are witnessing our relationship to it, mm-hmm. its relationship to us.
Right.
And what he would love about the fact that in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, there is always a crowd around his paintings,
right.
is that we are also engaged with other human beings and their relationship to it. When he was painting, he was always aware of what was happening around him in every way. Is this not meditation? You know, I want to bring it back to meditation as I always do.
Right.
And I'm going to do that with a quote in 1 second. But I just want to say what excited me very much was that you said that he is still iconic. Mm-hmm. Is that not a spiritual master? Can we not always go back to anything spiritual, and we can always go back to it and learn because it is always unfolding? That is the nature of something that embodies truth,
right.
that embodies law at its core.
Yeah.
We can always reflect upon it, learn something about ourselves,
right.
learn something about the world around us,
right.
and that's what makes it spiritual. And
right.
that is what is his longevity. That is what
yes.
we will always learn something about the world we live in and mm-hmm. about ourselves.
Yes.
By looking at his paintings.
Yes, because he is, in a sense, considered to be a contemplative because
yes.
he looked at nature that way. And let's say the wheat fields again and the cypress trees, he went beyond the impressionists because he did not want to create just a fleeting moment. As you said before, he wanted to create the essence. And what he really did, he translated the languages of the wheat, of the cypresses, of anything he saw. That essence was really the spirit of the thing that he tried to capture. And he did it, you know, originally because he wanted to communicate, he wanted to tell people about this, but in the end, he did it because it saved him, it grounded him.
Yes.
When he was suffering in the end of his life, the last year of his life. The grounding that he felt, he expressed in his paintings, and I think that's why those last paintings of the last 2 years of his life are so grounding for us when we look at them.
Yes, and, you know, the contemplative is always going to confront suffering.
Yes.
You know, we suffer. There is not a human being that is not here that on some level does not understand or experience suffering.
Yes.
That is a part of how we grow. That is just the rub of being human, so to speak.
Right.
We will grow as a result of understanding and experiencing suffering. He lived it so well, and he knew that. He knew the play of opposites. And since we're talking about cypress trees, let's just go there and say we both know this. You know, everybody understands Vincent van Gogh's relationship to the color yellow and to sunflowers. And in painting the cypress trees, what's so fascinating about him is he was not only going for the essence of a cypress tree. He said in his strivings to understand sunflowers and understand light and understand joy and understand happiness, you can only understand happiness by understanding the darkness
and
the black. And he saw, I believe he called cypress trees the black flame of death. Is that correct?
Well, the cypress trees are traditionally a tree that symbolizes death. They're standing in cemeteries and so on in Europe. But he did say that in the cypress tree, he found the opposite to the sunflower.
Yes.
And he does say both are needed in life.
That's such a spiritual teaching.
That is, yes.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. And one of his favorite saying was, and he often wrote that to his brother, to be sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. So he always saw within the sorrow, and I think the suffering that he did, and he suffered intensely, it really made him raw. It made him more sensitive, more able to listen and to hear and to see what was around him.
Yes.
Often a wounded person is a more truthful messenger, I think, because they really, they feel. They don't have a barrier. They're vulnerable. They're open.
Yes, and I love it's such a service. You know, I want to constantly come back to this book, Carol, because it is beautiful. I have the utmost respect. Carol is an amazing writer, by the way, and she's got a background in art. I mean, I didn't introduce you so much.
That's all right.
Is that all right? I mean, Carol.
It's about Vincent. Anyway.
Okay, that's wonderful because I don't want to waste any time.
No.
Our time really goes, and I would just love for the listeners, you know, to know that Carol is an exceptional writer. I have read the letters myself. It is no small feat. We both have a background in fine art. And for an artist, you can learn so much. And I have gone back to these letters through this book. And, you know, my life has evolved to that from the art world to the world of, you know, I run a spiritual nonprofit, and to revisit these letters at this time in my life that I'm so focused on consciousness has been such a treat. So thank you. It is a service. And since we were talking for a moment about Vincent's brother and these letters, I'd love to read a quote from the book.
Okay.
And it talks a bit about that, about his relationship to his brother, to his upbringing, to nature, and to his role as an artist. So this is from Vincent's letters to his brother, and it is included in Carol's just lovely book. Vincent writes, "Many landscape painters don't have that intimate knowledge of nature, which those who have looked with sentiment at the fields from childhood on." You will say, pardon me, I think I just messed up that sentence a little bit. I'm just going to go on.
Yeah.
You will say, "But everyone has surely seen landscapes and figures since they were children." Question, was everyone also thoughtful as a child? Question, did everyone who saw them, heath, grassland, fields, woods, also love them, and the snow and the rain and the storm? Not everyone has done that the way you and I have. He's talking to his brother. It takes a special kind of environment and circumstances that have contributed to to it, and also a particular kind of temperament and character to make it take root. So I bring this sentence up. When he says the heath, the grassland, the fields, the woods, also love them, and the snow, and the rain, and the storm, there's a level of observation and a level of penetration into who he is as a human being that he understands the impact that that these surroundings in his childhood, that he was gifted in a way with a family that had reverence. He was taught reverence as a child.
He was.
Reverence is so important in appreciation, in sort of understanding who we are. It's a really important part within the practice of living awareness to understand that vision is connected to heart, mm-hmm. is connected to reverence, to appreciation. And having that then connect to the self, to understanding our own apparatus. And our own apparatus includes what we were born into, what situations we were born onto. Who are we? What are we made up of? And how can we engage by grounding in understanding who we are and who we come from? What inspires us? What has impacted our awareness thus far? And using that as a sort of refuge, a place in which we can, a point of departure for our growing sense of self. I love that he says, he questions, does everybody else have that? Has everybody else right. been giving that? So he's questioning his ground of being. He's yeah. questioning his roots. Yeah. And often in his writing, he goes back to that as a sort of he takes refuge in that,
right.
in that he says how wonderful that he was grown in an environment and circumstances that have contributed to it. And that he was given a certain temperament and character that has allowed those experiences to take root.
That's
within
right.
this practice, we often will have people create energetic roots mm. into the ground that connect not only to the earth itself, but to our sense of self within that. It's a very spiritual moment within the practice that right. involves very physical, a very physical appreciation of who we are.
That's
that
right.
was a lot of talk. I'm going to let
right.
Carol, because I know she's going to have plenty to say about who Vincent was mm-hmm. and where he came from that created that sense of sort of appreciation and who
okay.
was he?
Well, he was a very sensitive child. He grew up in a pastor's family, a Protestant pastor's family, and he grew up with the knowledge that nature was really the book, quote unquote, through which the Creator revealed himself. So from early childhood on, and he was a solitary child, he had that reverence. It was instilled in him, but it was enforced by him constantly being outdoors. He grew up in a rural area in Holland, and he had the wide horizon, the circular horizon around him. He was aware of the sky, the weather, the seasons, the laborers in the field. So, and he, because he was solitary, all of these things drew him, and he drew them into his being. I often will say that Vincent's early life was rooted in the fertile soil of Holland. And it's the matrix, that fertile soil, from mm. which one day those sunflowers would grow out, would become so incredibly beautiful, beautifully painted by him. Because of his early childhood, because of also the parables that he heard about the sower and the prodigal son and the things that he received as a child that sensitized him to being compassionate, to being empathetic, to living and looking at people also with an eye of concern and love. He just had this amazing beginning. And he always never left that beginning, that fertile soil of his childhood remained a part of him all his life. Whatever he took into him remained a part of him. And would be one day expressed in his paintings.
He said, and you may know the quote by heart, he basically said that he felt that this purpose in life was really we are just sowing the seeds. Mm-hmm. And it is our human trajectory, our what we create in this world is then the reaping. It
yeah.
is when we pass on and we have left something behind that this entire mm-hmm. – this entire human experience is simply a sowing of the seeds.
Yeah.
And
he
really did, he really understood that at a very deep level. His father was a minister.
Yes.
So we're gonna take a break in a minute. We're at
right.
break time. And then I'd love to hear about this word compassion. I hear that this fertile soil, he understood these parables.
Mm-hmm.
He understood that we could look at life and we could learn quite a bit very deeply by looking at just our physical
right.
surroundings. We could take that in and we could draw from that. And I love that you use the word draw, that
okay.
he drew these
yeah.
in.
Right.
And what did he do? He drew.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
was a painter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his father was a minister, which many people may not know. And I find it so interesting that we will often only think of Van Gogh as the sufferer, the tortured mm-hmm. soul. We've got this idea that he was a painter, but He was a painter who cut off his ear.
Yes,
he was a painter who committed suicide. All of these things, which may or may not be so factually true.
Right.
And even to this day, right now, we've got a show at the Van Gogh Museum,
exactly.
which is talking about the madness of Van Gogh.
Right.
There are so many articles just in the last figures that we've got this, you know, this is topical right now. And just the so many articles have come up this summer talking about Van Gogh. So we're going to take a break, as I said. And when we come back, I'd love to hear a little bit about how his upbringing really did give way to this compassion and what that means in your words.
Okay.
So we will be right back with Sphere of Fire Radio.
There are so many resources out there for meditation, but did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Vadili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's A-T-A-A-N-A-method.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Artie Hoffman is the hottest psychic with the warmest heart and the host of the hit show Angels and Answers. A renowned psychic, medium, spiritual life coach, and an entertaining motivational speaker, Artie has helped over 15,000 people with his amazing intuitive gifts, his passion, and his humor. Call 877-ANGEL-02 to schedule a personal reading or to have your own psychic Artie party. That's 877-ANGEL-02. And visit ArtieHoffman.com and Angels and Answers on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer.
Join us on Spirit Fire Radio. Discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day.
And watch yourself connect in a whole new way. Find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. for your weekly guide to practical mindfulness. And to learn more, visit www.spiritfireradio.com.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit lynnbrownevent.com. That's lynnbrownevent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, this is Leslie Fontaine, and my show is Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com. When we're bogged down with our emotions, the hardships that plague us in our relationships, at work, our finances, we literally can't see the higher plane where we could be operating from. Tune in to Leslie Fontaine, Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. We are having such a lovely discussion about a topic that I am so passionate about. We are talking about Vincent Van Gogh, and the word passion just comes right to the forefront. As soon as we say his name, the vibration of Vincent Van Gogh is so present in our human experience, and that word passion just comes to mind. We're talking about ground of being. And ground is something we're so familiar with when we talk about Vincent Van Gogh. You know, we even think of the ground of his paintings. When we look at the texture in one of his paintings, we can feel the paint. We can feel the texture. It's much like looking at the texture of the ground. It's so real and so present. And he feels so real and so present even to this day. We were talking before the break about his childhood. and about his ideas at a very young age. He was very perceptive. He sort of was always searching for his purpose, and not only for his purpose, but his purpose in relation to the purpose of humanity. There is a letter. He wrote so many letters to his brother, and it's where we've got insight to his mind and to his soul. I'm going to read a quote that is from his letters that's included in Carol Berry's wonderful book called Vincent Van Gogh, His Spiritual Vision in Life and Art. This quote says, "It is an old faith and it is a good faith that our life is a pilgrim's progress, that we are strangers in the earth, but that though this be so, yet we are not alone, for our Father is with us. We are pilgrims. Our life is a long walk, a journey from earth to heaven." It almost makes me choke up, right? I mean, there's so much truth he's searching, you know? Mm-hmm. And that point in this the point in the meditation practice is the journey from heaven to earth. We are connecting our ground of being with really the essence of who we are. Mm-hmm. And I find that quote to be so beautiful. So we understand that this is a faithful man. He understands he's got true spiritual convictions. Could you tell us a bit, Carol, about how did that come about in his life, and where did he find that sort of aspect of his journey?
Well, I think the fact that he was brought up in a religious home, and where the parables were reinforced in the nature, the natural surroundings. So he was brought up also to be charitable. His parents took him to the homes of the parishioners, and he even said, as a child, he would look into the face of a woman who, looked downhearted, and he would immediately feel drawn to that. He, for the rest of his life, was always drawn to people that looked like they had suffered and that they had had a hard time, and it somehow fed him, and he realized that part of what he needed to do or wanted to do in life was to alleviate the suffering of others and to bring light into the darkness. And so there is so much to talk about it, but he eventually, even though he started out as an art dealer apprentice, wanted to become a pastor like his father, because he felt he could live out those feelings of wanting to bring comfort to people through the profession of a pastor. And he tried it. He became a missionary in a very dark, dark area, a mining district in the Bourguignage. But because he was such a sensitive person, and because in order to help someone, he had to suffer with them, that was his way of understanding his duty to help, was to know where that other person was, to feel that other person's pain. How could he help if he didn't? He lived so strongly into that faith of helping others that he neglected himself. He became even more ill and troubled and pained and sorrowful than the people he was supposed to minister to. Eventually, the missionary society let him go. He said, "You are not fit." But yet in his mind, he did exactly what Jesus would have done, because that's what he writes about. He would have been right there. He would have brought the alleviation of their pain. So it's at that time, and to me, this is one of the most moving parts of his life. He was alone in the mining district in the Borinage in Belgium. He had been really basically abandoned by the church, by the religious establishment, by his family too. And it's at that time when he was told that he didn't speak well enough. He wasn't a good pastor, a good missionary. He was in a place where he was completely alone and forsaken and dark. And it's in that place he realized that the language he would actually use to communicate would be the visual language, because he had seen artists like a Rembrandt, he had seen artists like a Delacroix, who could convey feeling, who could convey passion, who could convey truth through their visual images. So it's that moment, that very, very dark moment, where his faith was strong. He always believed in a higher power, but he decided to serve that higher power on his own terms with his own language. And that's when he began to draw. He was already 27, 28 years old, and he would only have 10 more years left to complete what he did in the end. But it then became such an incredible drive and a passion for him and a duty to convey what he could see in nature and what he could see in other people, that there was beauty in the poor miner, that there was beauty and depth and love in a potato farmer. I mean, people who most others would not see. He saw the beauty. He saw the divine in those people.
And he saw the truth.
He saw the truth.
You know, he saw that the truth of a potato eater is in their hands.
Exactly.
You know,
in their service to humanity, really.
Yes, and absolutely. I mean, we talk about that quite a bit.
And
we talk about chakras and the throat center being of service and the shoulders. What weight can one bear? You know, he was a very throat, if we're going to talk chakras, you know, very throat. What is the service? How much can I bear? What I loved was that beyond the suffering, he was always striving, even though we sort of think of him and almost erroneously, you know, we've got illusions about Van Gogh. And what I love is that this book helps to really get to the core of who this man was and his offerings on a spiritual level, which is just so beautiful because there's so much richness to this man. You know, I, as a young artist, I found so much inspiration in that feeling of I'm a lonely artist, you know, here I am, a struggling artist. And as an artist, I receive so much. And now as a spiritual seeker, I find so much. So there's a quote in the book that says, this is again from Van Gogh. I'm not reading your quotes from your book because I have you right in front of me.
That's
so wonderful.
Right.
We get to hear your take on these quotes, which so much of the book is so enlightening and really talks so beautifully about the light of Vincent Van Gogh as opposed to the dark. And aren't you, in a sense, by writing this book, I'm going off on a bit on a tangent, you know, aren't you creating that wonderful balance? We often, so often, when we tell stories and have dialogue about Van Gogh, it's often about his darkness.
Right.
We all appreciate his paintings. Make no mistake.
Yes.
When we have our you know, our sunflower coffee mug, we don't look at that sunflower mug and think, "Ooh, I've got a crazy person's image." We think, "I love the beauty in this image." So we do, I think, appreciate him in a very pure, true level, in a way he wanted to be appreciated. But when we dialogue about him, we often miss the point.
Yes.
So this book is so successful and such a service in bringing the truth and the deeper offerings that this soul had to bring to humanity. So I so appreciate that. In the book, he writes, "I believe that if one wants to make figures, paint figures, that is what he's saying, one must have a warm feeling within oneself, a good will to all. That is, one must have a real love for people. At least I hope to try my best to be in such a mood as much as possible." You could hear in that.
Yeah.
I hope to do my best as much as possible. He's so aware of his limitations, is he not, at all times?
Yes, absolutely.
Aware of his rub, of where he might falter. And he strives and to find – it is the ground of one's being to find their place on this planet that will be the truth of their expression. Is that not what we're all here? To find a sort of home that feels that we are connected to our purpose and that through that connection, we can express our innermost. We can express and be an expression of the divine. He understood that that's what we are here for. That is to find one's spiritual core. How can I be of service? How can I create a life that is an expression of my truth and of my wholeness?
Right.
And it's so lovely, as you say. You know, he received an honest – the truth was – he was not going to be able to live up to sort of the family name that his family had aspirations that he was going to be successful.
Right.
He was going to create a good name for himself. You know, isn't it funny that he turned out to be probably one of the most important artists of a modern era?
Right.
And this is what his family wanted for him, if they only knew. Perhaps their souls did know. But these limitations were so clear to him from the beginning that you are going to be reduced – and those are harsh words, to simply being a painter, to simply being alone in the fields, to the relationship being between you, color, oil paint, linseed oil, a canvas, a cypress tree, and your solitude, and your pondering, and your processing. But I love that in this quote, he is still saying, one still must try to find love. One still must try to be a good person. And I believe that that's where the compassion comes from.
Right.
So I would love to hear in your words, let's just define compassion from your perspective, if you don't mind.
No, that's fine. And I will also be using what I have learned from others. But Vincent, as that case study in that class long time ago that I took, his life went through different stages that then determined the fact that he was such a compassionate man. And the three stages are solidarity. In order to be able to be compassionate, you have to, as I said before, feel deeply the wounds of life, feel deeply other people's pain, feel deeply whatever is in front of you. So he lived in solidarity with the poor, with the minors. And there he was, not trying to alleviate or solve their problems, but he was there to console them. He was there to let them know they were not alone. And that is sort of the second stage of a compassionate life. You are there with another person. And he did that through painting his pictures of people, doing a portrait. It's a very intimate thing. He was there with another person. So who did he paint? Who did he draw in his early years of learning? The poor, the people from the almshouses, the people from the soup kitchens. Eventually, though, he had to move beyond the just consoling to the place where he could point to glimpses of comfort and hope. And that's what he did in his paintings. His paintings became what the compassionate person does, is the strength together, because there is more to the suffering. We're here together. He points to the beauty. He points to the depth. He points to the ground of being in his paintings.
And if I could just jump in, what I find, and this just came to me, the brilliance of this is, you can imagine that this is a man who really is at his, he is in his ground. Mm-hmm. He is connected when he's painting.
Right.
And so you can imagine that when one turns or has a need to be with a pastor or with someone who may redefine purpose for them, show them light, show them a sort of sense of hope, a mm-hmm. sense of aspiration, a sense of glory. Mm-hmm. Here in sitting across from them painting their portrait, or someone happening upon him while he's engaged in a painting, is he not emanating light? Is he not connected to source? Is he not connected to God?
Right.
And so in a sense, he's being pastoral in every way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been more than 100 years since he died, and he's still pastoring in that sense. Because, you know, Vincent believed that nature was the ground of his being. And he wrestled with nature, really. What he writes about, wrestling with nature to discover her secret. How can he convey that? How can he convey what nature is revealing? And what he found was that everything we see, everything we look upon, really points to something more, points to a greater source. And what he's trying to do with his paintings is to make us see that. He is extending our vision. He is hoping that we will realize that everything temporal is also eternal. Mm. It points to the eternal. So there is a circular thing here, I think.
And isn't that the cypress trees again?
Yeah.
They're always pointing to the eternal. Yeah. You know, he really did have a thing about death, I have to say.
Well, you know, he felt that death was the other side of life.
Yes, exactly.
It's the other hemisphere, he said.
Beautiful.
And when he paints the reaper within the field, woven into the field of wheat, he says this: it is a symbol of death, but it's almost smiling because it is part of life.
Yes.
And wheat for him was a symbol for humanity anyway. You have the sower sowing the seed of the new life, and then the wheat ripening and bearing the new seeds again. And so it would keep going.
And then you have the human beings just making bread.
Yeah.
I found the quote.
Which nourish us.
I'm going to read the quote. He says, one needs a certain dose of inspiration, a ray from on high right. that is not from within ourselves.
Right.
How beautiful, in order to do beautiful things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read that again. One needs a certain dose of inspiration, a ray from on high that is not from within ourselves in order to do beautiful things. There's ground of being right there.
Right.
In order to do beautiful things, that means to embody oneself mm-hmm. and create something that is worthwhile, one must be connected to a ray right. on high. We right. must be inspired. He
right.
says, when I had done those sunflowers, I looked for the opposite and yet the equivalent. And I said, it is the cypress. I love it. You know, it's so interesting. Carol and I both stood we had both been to the asylum where Van Gogh spent, he created quite a bit there. He saw the beauty. He was not sort of he understood the bars. He understood the opportunity for the appreciation of that was outside of the bars. And you sort of almost see he understood that he was trapped in a body, you know, that in a sense this life was a prison in a way, and he must strive to get beyond it.
Right.
What is beyond the walls? What is beyond the bars? How can I appreciate? And the wheat field with cypress trees is from, from Saint-Rémy,
right.
which is got to be one of my most favorite paintings.
Yeah.
On earth.
Yeah. Well, it is also one of mine. There are many. I keep looking at others and I feel them. Those are speaking to me too. And what I always felt too, he captures the vibratory quality of life. We know that everything vibrates,
yes.
everything is made up of atoms. There's so much energy in everything. And so with his brushstrokes and with his incredibly energetic lines, he sort of captures the energy of life, you know, the,
yes.
the source of it all.
Uh-huh.
And he painted in the end in Saint-Rémy at the asylum, he painted more and more to comfort himself. And a piece of art is considered to be a real piece of art if the viewer feels the same as the artist who painted it at the time of painting.
So union, right?
Yeah.
We experience
yeah.
union.
Yeah.
Right. Carol, can you imagine we're actually nearing the end of our show? We could just go on.
And
I want to, before the end of the show, I really want our listeners to understand the service that this beautiful human being across from me is providing. I've done a little sneaky research, and Carol was kind enough to stop by on her way to a retreat. And we hadn't talked about this yet, but I just find it so wonderful. You know, I know the retreat business. I know meditation retreats. And something happens when we take ourselves out of our lives, what's expected of us, what you know, our everyday, and we put ourselves in a situation that is going to be contemplative, that is going to force us to take a look at ourselves and take a look at life and who we are and what are we doing here. Vincent van Gogh made that his everyday mission. You know, he said, I am in the fray. I get it. I am a human being that's in the fray, and I'm just going to live it, and I'm going to express, and I'm going to be me, and something will come of it. You are about to you are about to lead a week-long silent meditation retreat based on the compassion of Van Gogh.
Right.
I know we're here to talk about Van Gogh. We've mentioned the book, but I'd love to hear just a few words. I mean, we just have, you know, we have a few minutes left. This is going to be a wonderful experience for people. I'm almost a little bit envious. I would love to be at this retreat. People will be in silence, and I assume they will be contemplating nature a bit, mm-hmm. contemplating compassion. Can you just tell us a little bit about what one might receive from this experience?
Well, I hope to have people experience, first of all, the life of Vincent, which is such an amazing testimony to a person who wanted to, help reveal the ground of being. I'm finding it hard to express myself. So what I hope the people who come into the retreat will get is, first of all, an understanding of this artist and his mission and his struggle and his humanness. And I want to have them also realize what the art language is all about and how he is creating this language of comfort. So I am going to have people look at nature, look at everything a little bit deeper, draw nature a little bit, sharpen their visual skills, because through what we see, we enrich ourselves, we understand more of what is around us. So And then again, as Vincent said, the more you see, the more you understand, the more you love. So compassion comes out of this time of solidarity, basically being in nature, being with one another, learning about this artist and his mission, and just experiencing a new way of looking, I think, because that's what Vincent wanted us to do. Look at the world, look at each other, and see what's so beautiful. We have in us the germinating seed in a kernel of wheat. We have in us love, and that is that incredible life force. And be more aware of it. Be aware.
And the capacity for magnificence. Mm. You know, magnificence is all around us. We
right.
just have to notice.
Yeah.
And beautifully said, by the way. Mm. I'm almost ready to get in the car with you and tell Tim, hey Tim, you're not here. Sorry, I'm going to a week long meditative retreat. It sounds wonderful.
Thanks.
And such a wonderful service. I would just add that so much of what you said has to do with meditation. You know, I almost sometimes feel like I'm the salesman. It's not that at all. It's that every word you said about this, about what people may receive, is what they receive from the practice of living awareness. And
right.
it's what Van Gogh wanted for us all, to create a life that is embodied and is integrated with a living awareness.
Right.
You know, when we develop sight that is beyond our typical vision, when we see nature in its – when we have reverence for it, when we see it in its full capacity for magnificence and for touching our soul, we are alive and we find our place within it. It reminds us who we are. It reminds us what our purpose is. It reminds us of our ground. You know, we are here to be expressions of the divine. And if we have lost touch of that, all we need to do is look at expressions of the divine around us, and we are reminded that we are surrounded by magnificence. And once that touches our heart, once that touches our soul, we are reminded that it is us. It is of us. It is who we are, and it is what we are. So, Carol, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I feel like we could do this for another hour. It's been great.
It's been wonderful.
So I just want to, once again, is there anything you'd like to tell the listeners about yourself, about the book? Anything you'd like to say?
I'm happy that the book is mentioned. I do find that it's sort of a mission of mine to make people aware of Vincent as a man who was very whole and rather than this wounded, the cutting off the ear and all these things that we're now talking about. I want
Thank goodness.
People. Pardon?
Thank goodness.
Yes, that's part of my mission. But I think Vincent has been teaching me too. So I think I have no words anymore to say anything. I think you've done a lovely job bringing things out and talking about the book. And I think I'm just on a mission too.
Wonderful. We are all on missions.
Yeah.
Isn't that so?
And I
love that he has become a part of your ground of being.
Right.
Your being, your presence is so lovely, and what you offer is so lovely. Once again, the book is called Vincent Van Gogh. Pardon me, listeners, for just saying it. Vincent. His Spiritual Vision in Life and Art by Carol Barry. So it has just been a treat. We are, you know, the ground of being is such a wonderful step within the practice. It's one of my favorites. So once again, spiritfireradio.com has got links to our practice of living awareness, meditation practice. And Carol, maybe I'll invite you back and we're going to talk about the ear and we're going to talk about the madness, because, you know, as Vincent Van Gogh is an icon, he will reveal his truth. He's not anywhere near gone
right.
from our dialogue, and we will slowly get to his truth as we can handle it.
Right.
You and I can handle it. We're going to get our listeners to be able to handle it on the next show.
Sounds
We're
going
to go beyond all of that silliness and talk again about his course. So if you'll come back.
I will come back.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, listeners. We will see you next week on Spiritfire Radio. It's been a treat. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to meditation and living with awareness. Join hosts Tim Darter and Steve Kramer and discover the ways that consciousness is being cultivated in everyday life. Connect to your day in a whole new way and find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more about Spirit Fire, visit spiritfireradio.com.